Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another 4th of July. And we've got a pretty good crowd here, actually. I was wondering how many people would show up because there are a lot of people traveling, vacationing. And it's warm enough to inhibit people from maybe coming to church. But anyway, 233 years ago, the Declaration of Independence was signed. And Mr. Luker mentioned parts of it last week, so I'm not going to reiterate what he said. But going back about a year and a half before this, we're all familiar with those rich American heritages that we possess. For example, Paul Revere and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's poem, One If By Land, Two If By Sea, and I on the opposite shore shall be ready to ride and spread the alarm. We may not know it verbatim, but it's very much a part of our history. Or two and a half months approximately after the signing of Declaration of Independence, Nathan Hale's statement, the first American spy who was executed at the tender age of 21, saying, I only regret I have but one life to give to my country. And most of us, once again, don't know the exact date or time, but those are just examples of what we've been taught over the years and make this whole season a very, very meaningful part of our lives. John Adams wrote to his wife Abigail after the signing of the Declaration, saying that this will be a time that will go down in history. It's an epoch that will be long remembered and should be celebrated every year with acts of devotion to Almighty God, with pomp and parade, with games, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations. I think if he were to come back today, he would see plenty of illuminations because fireworks are so much a part of the 4th of July that it tends to overshadow practically everything else. And I think that probably, except for us here today, there are not too many acts of devotion to Almighty God. God doesn't enter in, I think, in the way that he envisioned. We have paid a price over the years for the freedom that we enjoy today. The Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Civil War, World War I, the Spanish-American War before that, and December 7th, 1941, when the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor propelled us into the Second World War, followed by, a few years later, Korea, Vietnam, and today, because of 9/11, we're engaged in two fronts in Afghanistan and Iraq. So the price of freedom has not come easily. Well, how free are we? I think, as you all know, Mr. Luker said, you know, we don't have to worry about people coming in here and dragging us out to some jail somewhere for what we believe. Not yet, anyway. So for the most part, we enjoy freedoms that are unparalleled and are not enjoyed by other parts of the world. But I think there's one freedom that we perhaps do not enjoy in the same way, and that's what I'd like to talk about today. It's financial freedom. Now, Carl Anderson spoke and gave a very comprehensive analysis of finances about a month ago, and so this is not a rehash of what Carl said because he had a handout with a lot of really good information on. But it's more an examination of two attitudes that contribute to financial freedom that I would like to discuss today. Let's start by turning over to Proverbs 22 and verse 7. Proverbs 22, verse 7, explore and enunciates a basic principle that you're probably all familiar with, but it bears repeating. And that is simply, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender, or slave to the lender, however you want to define that. Anytime you owe anyone or any entity money, you are a servant to that person, or that bank, or that finance company, or that credit union. You're not free. And of course, the financial meltdown that we've seen over the last year bears out the great consequences of the enormous debt that the American public in general seems to have. Let's turn over to one other scripture. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 8. 1 Timothy 6, verse 8. Why are we so much in debt? Why do we have so much credit card debt? Why do we have so many things in our homes that are not paid for? Well, I think that Madison Avenue has certainly done its job in advertising and in getting us to the point where when our neighbor drives into the driveway next door with a brand new car, it tends to make us salivate and think, that looks pretty nice. I think maybe I should look into getting a new car. Or when you visit a friend's and you see their new flat screen TV, hey, that is really great. Think of the football games we can watch on that. Maybe we should get one. And this is the attitude that is found in America today. Timothy, however, is talking about the simple life and the simplicity of what life should be. And he said, "And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." Contentment doesn't necessarily come with a new car and with a flat screen TV or with any other plethora of items that you could put in your house that look nice, that you saw on a showroom floor, that you looked at in the catalog. The real contentment, of course, comes from our contact with God. And the basic simple life, food and clothing, can pretty well help us in that endeavor. Now, I want to make a couple of assumptions here before I continue, and that is that, one, we're all tithing, that we believe in the concept of tithing. I'm not going to try and prove tithing. If there are people that are listening online, they can look at other articles about that, but I'm assuming, just for the sake of this message this afternoon, that we're all conversant with tithing, we agree with tithing, we understand tithing, we understand how we're blessed when we tithe, and how we may not be blessed if we don't tithe. So I'm not going to discuss that. And I'm also, in this address, going to assume that the people hearing this are able-bodied and capable of working. Not, you know, if you're disabled in some way, have a disability and can't work, if you have children at home, then you have the responsibility for those children. I'm just talking about the people that are able to work, could work, can work, and for whatever reason, maybe don't work. About 2 years ago, I was driving home in the evening from the park and ride, and I have about a 7-mile ride from the park and ride to where we live. And I turned on the radio, and I was on KCIS, which is 6:30 a.m. I happened to hear a man by the name of Dave Ramsey. And I don't know, I know some people here are familiar with him because they've talked to me about him and his program. I've even recommended to several people who have asked me about finances that they listen to that program. He's on from 3 in the afternoon until 7, and this is actually a rebroadcast of an earlier program that he does live from Nashville. I guess it would be 10 Eastern time or 11 Eastern time, something like that. But it's rebroadcast on KCIS from 3 to 7. So I pick up about 20 minutes or 25 minutes of it every day. I started listening to him because he was very interesting, and what he was saying was very informative. Sometimes, at first, he was a little brusque, I thought, and you tended to say, well, who does he think he is? But a little background that I learned about him as this program continued was that he'd been a millionaire 20 years ago and went bankrupt when the real estate market went south. He gradually repaid all of his debts and became a Christian as a result of that experience in his life. And I don't remember if I heard how he got into broadcasting, but today he has 200 people that work for him, and he takes questions from 3 to 7, or, you know, the rebroadcast that I listen to. All kinds of financial questions of every type, and answers them from the perspective of the Bible. He believes in tithing, and it's very, very interesting, because what I thought was a brusqueness on his part turned out to be the real humanity of the man. And he will say quite often, he says, I'm not being mean to you. I don't want you to think I'm mean, brother, but I've been there. I've done that. I've paid a stupid tax. And he'll tell people, what you did was stupid, and you're paying the stupid tax now, which simply means when you make a mistake, there's always a consequence. When you make a financial mistake, there's always a consequence. You borrow too much money, and pretty soon you're looking at a credit card that rolls over at 18%, and you never get out of that. You're shackled to that credit card. You're never able to pay it off. And so he talks about this type of thing. But then he goes through and shows these people how they can get out of debt. Sometimes it's very difficult. Sometimes, he says, it's not a quick fix. It's going to take you several years to do this, but it can be done. And he said, once you have financial freedom, there's no other thing in your life that'll give you the same exhilaration as being able to be free. And that means, and he stresses this, money is for three things: to spend, to save, but also to give. And he's not just talking about giving to the church, but giving to your friends in need, giving to your family, being able to be a giver. How many people would like to be a giver, but they're so up to their neck in debt, they never have an opportunity because they don't have the way to do it. Spend, save, and give. He says, maybe you need to take a second job in the evening. One of his jobs he refers to is delivering pizzas. I don't know. But apparently people can earn up to $1,000 a month delivering pizzas in the evening. But he says, hold garage sales and yard sales. As a matter of fact, you should be holding so many that every time the family dog sees you headed in his direction, he hides. He thinks he's next. He's very humorous, and that's one of the enjoyable parts of listening to him, because he gets his point across, and yet he does it in a humorous and a humane way. He says you should eat beans and rice, and rice and beans. That should be what you concentrate on eating. And he said you shouldn't see the inside of a restaurant unless you're working there. And he talks about having a plastectomy. That's when you take all your credit cards and cut them up. That's a plastectomy. I'm not there myself yet, because I've had one for a long time. But I've always used it to pay it off at the end of the month. But one of the things he talked about with regard to that is that Dun & Bradstreet did a study, and they showed that when you have a credit card, you spend on average 18 to 20% more per month. 18 to 20% more per month. And I doubt if any of you have investments that earn that much. Maybe some of you do, but I doubt it. 18 to 20%. And if you think about it, it's much easier to just slip your credit card over to whoever it is. If you're eating out, put a 15% tip there, or 20%, even though the waiter didn't really serve you. But no, feel good, It's much easier to do that than to open your wallet, count out the greenbacks, or take a debit card and hand it to them, knowing that zap, once that $120.96 goes with a debit card, it's out of your checking account. I mean, we're lazy in that regard. It's easier to deal with a credit card. You get one bill a month, sure, that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But you're paying a price for that. Is it worth 18 to 20%? Now, I've been listening 2 years, and I said I haven't cut up my credit card. But one of the things that's interesting about him is the fact that he will not accept credit cards in payment for his books, his CDs, or anything that he sells. And he sells a lot of stuff over the internet. He said, if I had accepted credit cards, he said, I'd be a hypocrite because I can't preach against credit cards and then use them. So, it to me kind of validates what he's saying, and he really believes in what he's saying. He talks about a debt snowball. If you want to get out of debt, here's a basic way of doing it. You list all of your debts from largest to smallest. And then regardless of how much interest you're paying on the largest debt, you start and you focus on paying off your smallest debt. Say the smallest debt is only costing you 4% and the largest is costing you 18%. Nevertheless, he said, pay off the smallest debt. And the reason for that is it's forming a habit. It's giving you the discipline. It's giving you traction. It allows you to see some progress. Hey, I had 6, and now I only have 5. And you feel like you're getting somewhere. And then with the money that you had been spending on that, you can focus on the next debt and so on up the ladder, until you achieve financial freedom. And one of the most interesting things about this is every Friday, people will call in and scream over the radio, I'm debt free. Because they've listened to him and they've implemented the things, and he talks to them about what they've done, how they did it, what was the hardest thing of doing it. In any event, I don't want to belabor the point, but one of the things that he says, and this is the point, and I maybe should have mentioned it first, if you live like nobody else, you will be able to live like nobody else. And you have to think about it a minute to get what he's saying. But if you live like nobody else, if you live on beans and rice, if you drive an old car for a couple of years because you want to get rid of that $20,000 debt that you're upside down in with a new car, if you live like that, the time will come when you're out of debt that you will have the cash, because you've saved the cash to go and buy any car that you want. If you live like no one else, you will be able to live like no one else. Turn to Luke 12 and verse 7. Luke 12, verse 7. But even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you're of more value than many sparrows. A well-known verse. A German scientist did an experiment once, did a survey. He determined, on average, people that have red hair have 90,000 hairs in their head. If you have black hair, you have 110,000 hairs in your head. If you're brown-headed, a few more. If you're blondes, you have 140,000 hairs in your head. So all I'm thinking is the blondes are probably providing a lot of work for their guardian angels if they're looking at every one of those hairs and feeling responsible for every one of them. But it stands to reason, if God knows the hairs on our head, doesn't he also know the follicles in which those hairs are inserted that nourish those hairs? And to take it a step further, doesn't he also know what's going on in that scalp that holds the follicles and the skull right beneath the scalp and the brain where all the neutrons are running around inside there that govern everything we say and do and think? Well, of course. So if he knows us so intimately, turn to Matthew 6, verse 31. Matthew 6, verse 31. Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewith shall we be clothed? Once again, Christ is talking about the basic necessities that we need. What we eat, what we drink, what we wear, that I mentioned before. A basic lifestyle. Back in 2001, I had had noticed a number of years before that we had a number of trees that would blow down every winter. And I ended up cutting them up for firewood, even though my heart ached every time I cut these beautiful big saw logs up, because they could have been used for lumber. However, they fell in different spots, and it wasn't feasible economically to have someone come in and try to log them and yard them out. It just didn't make sense. So I finally contacted a forest engineer. He came out and surveyed our property, set off the wetlands, and got a permit for a stream that goes through, and hired a logger. And while we were at the feast in 2001, a man came in and they logged it. Now, Washington law requires that you replant within 3 years after the property's logged. So I wanted to do it right away, because after everything is cut and is taken out, they take a bulldozer and they'll take all the debris and the slash, the tops, the branches and the stumps, and they'll push it all together and have a burn. They'll have a burn pile and they'll burn it. And the reason for that is when you replant, then the new trees are uninhibited. They don't have a lot of things to try to work their way through. So I found out that in order to replant the part that was logged, I need about 3,000 trees, Douglas firs. So I ordered them for delivery in February, the following February. And they arrived on a pallet, and I looked at that. And, you know, they were maybe about this high, little Douglas firs all bunched together in bunches of 50, I think. And I thought, oh, I should be able to whip through those in a week. So I decided to take a week's vacation. Now, I thought that once the bulldozer had gone over all of that land, it should be fairly easy to stick a shovel in and open an opening to put the little tree in. But I found that, much to my dismay, underneath all of that bare ground, there was the residue of roots from all kinds of blackberries and bushes and small trees that had been there before that had been missed many times. And so it wasn't just a question like going into a freshly tilled, rototilled ground and being able to slip something in and go on your way. You had to work with the shovel to try and force it open and put the tree in. So I started doing it at one end of the property, and Veronica, my wife, helped me, and Kelly and Patty, two of my daughters, came and also helped, and my brother-in-law Dean and his wife Emma came throughout the course of this. But it was very discouraging because it was so slow, and I would start looking over at it was probably about the length of a football field one way and maybe three quarters another, and this is just one side of the road, half of what we had to plan. I'd look over at the other side and I'd get really discouraged. We're never going to get over there. And then I thought of something that I had read. By the yard, life is hard. but by the inch, life's a cinch. And I told myself, I'm going to quit looking over at that other side. I'm going to just look at the spot I'm digging in and the 6 feet or 5 feet or whatever the length was for the next hole. And that's the way I'm going to approach this. I'm not looking because that's too discouraging. By the yard, life is hard. And that's what it was looking over there. By the inch, life's a cinch. A little bit, like Dave Ramsey and his attack to a problem. You take the smallest one first. You deal with the smallest one. So gradually, each day, we'd get a few more planted. And the interesting thing about the weather in February, you know, it's usually frosty in the morning a lot of times, so we couldn't start until about 11 when the frost had melted. And then sunset, you know, around 4:30. So we didn't have a big window for planting. So that even kind of exacerbated the problem a little further. But we just kept working on it. And finally, I got to the end of the week. I had to go back to work. But my daughter, Kelly, decided to stay. And so she helped out. And we'd start trying to do it in the evenings and on Sundays when we were home. We finally got it done. By the yard, life was hard, but by the inch, life became a cinch. That is another aspect that you have to apply to getting out of debt, to financial freedom, is you have to realize that the number of months and or years that you've accumulated whatever debt you have, you're not going to just walk out the door and it's all going to disappear. You have to work at it. But the main thing is that you get the encouragement from someplace that it is doable, and that's why I'm suggesting you listen to Dave Ramsey. He's also on Fox Business News on TV in the evening, but I have not been able to find the station yet. But I'll guarantee you that if you listen to him for at least a month, you will get some very good information and you will get motivated, and he will be helpful to maybe putting a bee in your bonnet about getting out of debt and being able to do something and being able to see that it is doable, that you can do it, that it is possible. Well, today we celebrate the birth of our nation and the freedom that we all enjoy, the freedom that has been paid for by many men and women over the centuries since that declaration was signed. You can have and you can enjoy another type of freedom as well, and that is financial freedom. It is possible. I've been in the financial industry for a long time, and I learned a lot of things from Dave Ramsey that I wasn't familiar with. So if I was able to do it, considering my background, I'm sure that everyone in this room that is affected could learn from his example and learn from his information. If you remember these two principles, if you live like no one else, you will be able to live like no one else, because even though by the yard life is hard, by the inch it's a cinch.